This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the 14th of June 2013. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 14th of June 2013, which this week have been edited by Barbara Chase and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Right, let's get on to what's on, shall we? There's a few things which may be of interest. At the Mayflower in Southampton, there's Cats until Saturday, June the 22nd, and that's on at 7:30 p.m. and the matinees are Thursday, 2 p.m. and Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Then there's Strictly Confidential, Monday to Saturday, June the 24th to the 29th, 7:30 p.m. and matinees Thursday, 2 p.m., Saturday, 2:30 p.m. And the box office for that is 02380 711811. At the Nuffield Theatre, Southampton, we have The Sound of Music, and that's from Tuesday to Saturday, June the 25th to the 29th at 7:30 p.m. The box office number for that is 02380 671771. At the Anvil in Basingstoke, the Bert Camfort Gala Concert on Friday, June the 21st, and that's at 7:45 p.m. Box office number for that is 01256 844 244. And finally, at the Grange, Northington, there is the Grange Park Opera. That's until Saturday, July the 13th, and that includes on the repertoire I, Puritan, Eugene Onegin, Les Carmelites, and Fortunio. And the box office number for that is 01962 737 366. Now, Lighting Up Time ends on Friday, and that's today, 14th of June at 4:51 a.m. And it begins at 9:23 p.m. And on Wednesday the 19th of June, it ends at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:24 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. Right, the three headline stories this week are Residents Increase Resistance, Councillors Dismiss Opposition and Give New School the Nod, and Jessie the Little Miracle. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
Residents Increase Resistance. Winchester residents are building opposition against River Cottage's plans for a restaurant in the city. The company, run by celebrity chef and food campaigner Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, wants to turn Abbey Mill into a 180-seat eatery. But residents in Colebrook Street are angry over a lack of communication from the business and have noise and traffic concerns. They came out in force last Saturday, June the 8th, to protest. The City Council has put in a planning application to change the building's use from office to restaurant, but 24 residents have objected. Guy Ashton of Colebrook Street said, "With the noise and impact of delivery vehicles and waste collection, it would just be overwhelming, and nobody has talked to us about it. If River Cottage and the council had talked to us, we would have all been comfortable with the idea and been supporters. But instead, they've created a whole street opposed to what they want to do, and that's a failure on their part. Neighbour Gareth Davis, 59, added, "The council has not handled this process well. It seems to be steamrolling this through, and yet it goes against the council's own rules, its local plan. They really need to have a rethink, especially when there are other empty properties in more appropriate areas of the city. As like any decent landlord, they should be prepared to maintain the building to the standard that it could be rented as an office." Mr. Davis, a landlord himself, said residents would consider judicial review if a planning committee approved the application. The traffic plans state there will be about 38 deliveries per week, recommended between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. An additional 5 waste collection trips per week are also outlined. Opening hours are listed for 8 a.m. to midnight, and residents are concerned staff and customers could disrupt families late at night. As reported last week, council leader Keith Wood is keen for the restaurant to open to increase rental income, tourism, and business for local suppliers. He issued a portfolio holder decision notice to approve a revised budget for the refurbishment of Abbey Mill, formerly used by the City Council Engineers Department, including a rent rise and funds for advance works. The restaurant would have 130 indoor seats with 50 outside. It would create 27 full-time jobs and 18 part-time.
Now let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, councillors dismiss opposition and give new school the nod. Fears over the safety of pupils were raised as one of the main arguments against building a new super school in Winchester. Despite those concerns, the scheme to extend the Westgate School by building a new two-form entry primary was unanimously approved by Hampshire County Councillors last Thursday on June the 6th. Local residents were worried about the impact of extra cars from the 420-place primary school in Cheriton Road and the surrounding area, especially at pick-up and drop-off times. Liz Darlison, representing some residents who packed the public galleries, she said, "There will be traffic chaos with all the associated safety risks. Indeed, there are plenty of near misses already." Planning officers' revised estimates suggest 23% of parents could drive their children to the new primary due to its large catchment area stretching to Abbots Barton. This would mean about 100 extra cars at peak periods, but opponents, including Green campaigners, argue that it could be twice that number. The County Council received 140 letters of objection, with traffic and parking the main concerns. Opponents included Winchester City Council, Winchester Action on Climate Change, Winchester Friends of the Earth, and County Councillor Martin Todd, who represents the area. Some called for the council to instead expand existing primary schools to provide extra places, a so-called Option B rejected by the council chiefs last July. But Jeremy Brecknell, chairman of governors at the Westgate, said the planning application was about real children who lived in Winchester. He added, "They deserve better than places in temporary classrooms. This is a good proposal and we will make it work." The plan is to build the new primary school by September 2014 on the site of Rotherley House, a boarding house for the Westgate, which is closing. Rotherley House will be turned into a new school hall and music drama space, with classrooms in a linked new two-storey building. The nursery will move to new accommodation on the site. Under revised plans, there will be 32 new parking spaces on the eastern side of Chilbolton Avenue, plus 8 more in Cheriton Road. Other proposals to improve safety include widening the pavement near the school entrance, a lollipop man in Cheriton Road, and staggering the start and end of school days. Chief Planning Officer Peter Chadwick said an extra 100 parking spaces would be provided in total, including on-site staff parking. He said the Highways Authority backed the scheme. Councillors heard the number of out-of-catchment secondary pupils at the Westgate was expected to fall due to increased local demand, resulting in fewer buses and cars in future. After the meeting, ex-Winchester City Councillor Karen Barrett, who used to represent St Paul's Ward, criticised councillors for rubber-stamping the officers' proposals.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And this one is Jessie the Little Miracle. When little Jessie Vardy was wheeled into theatre for surgery, parents, Dawn and Dan, feared she would be in hospital for at least a week. But the six-year-old defied the odds when she crossed the finishing line at the Winchester Race for Life on Sunday, just 5 days after an operation to remove a cancerous tumour. The Bishop's Waltham youngster broke into a smile as her mum pushed her along the finishing straight in her buggy. Jessie underwent surgery at London's Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital on Tuesday to remove a cancerous lump from her armpit. The tumour was discovered in January and was the size of an orange. Intensive chemotherapy shrank it by 75%. Last week's operation to remove the rest required delicate surgery as it lay close to vital nerves, but Jessie was well enough to go home within 43 hours, although she needs another 6 months of chemotherapy. A 55-strong group of friends and family dubbed Team Jessie was among nearly 2,000 women who took part in the annual 5-kilometre event at the Garrison Ground and University of Winchester Stadium. Said Dawn, "We've been in and out of hospital for months, but this has been a real celebratory weekend of Jessie's life, and being able to look back and think, thank God that she is getting better." And the article is accompanied by a picture of Team Jessie, 55 mums and daughters, all with pink T-shirts, looking very, very happy, and little Jessie herself being carried by her mother in the middle of the photo.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, the editorial comment, and then first person. I'll start with the death notices. Barrett, John Barrett, peacefully aged 66. Bond, Ronald Frederick Ron Bond, aged 89. Brown, Kenvin Thomas Ken Brown, peacefully aged 92. Clifton, Joyce Ella Clifton, peacefully in Countess Mountbatten House, aged 74. Creese Smith, Gerald Creese Smith, aged 83. Johnson, Muriel Lucy Johnson, in Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 77. Lister, Eric Lister, peacefully at home, aged 98. Osman, Joan Alice Eliza Osman, peacefully aged 91. Peacock, Richard George Dick Peacock, unexpectedly at home in Oliver's Battery, aged 79. Riley, David Riley, unexpectedly in his sleep after a long illness. Salter, Bernard Salter, suddenly in France. Stanborough, David Allen Stanborough, peacefully at home. And finally, Trinder, Gerald Tommy Trinder, peacefully at home, aged 82. And now we'll go on with Christian comment, read by Jane.
And Christian comment this week is, "Summer's here, so let's delight in creation." It's hard to believe that this long, chilly winter, that in the last week we have been rejoicing in warm sunshine, the blossoming of many plants and trees, and people beginning to enjoy life outdoors without being muffled in scarves and thick coats. And of course, the character of our life changes. It is the season of village fetes, sports events, outdoor concerts and pageants. Somehow, this centres on how much we are affected by the weather and our experiences of nature. It seems that it's built into our genes, and from a religious sensibility, that pleasure in the natural world is an echo of the self-fulfillment God finds in creation. Praise, wonder, awe are all response to God's gift of the beauty of creation. Species are the etymology of creation's deepening appreciation of the language God uses, says one writer. Even playing is a proper response to the beauty of creation. The book of Proverbs tells that the figure of wisdom was by the Creator's side from the very beginning, delighting him day by day. Ever at play in his presence, at play everywhere in the world. Proverbs 8:30-31. Yes, we are to be accountable, responsible, especially when creation is threatened by potentially disastrous effects of climate change. But this does not prevent us from appreciating that God's dream for creation is that it should be experienced with joy, wonder, and gratitude. The American novelist Annie Dillard, who in Pilgrim of Tinker Creek, responding to the wonder of creation, cried, "Perhaps the way forward is indeed to go our way, crying glory and amen, watching for the tree with lights in it while hallowing our own piece of earth, tending the life which grows there." Recognizing the Spirit's presence in numerous forms of creation is part of this. The Jewish philosopher Martin Buber spoke of meeting the I-thou relationship with creation through people and also in the beauty of a tree. This would lead beyond creation, as the Book of Wisdom also teaches, to appreciate the presence of the eternal Thou, the Creator. Small wonder that people are increasingly adopting the idea of planting trees, both in preparation for wrongdoing of the past, in repentance for trampling on nature in the present, and in hope of regenerated nature in the future, when we hope that all will enjoy creation redeemed. As the Book of Revelation promises, on either side of the river were the trees of life, and the leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations. Revelations 22:1.
Now, we've got 11 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Shirley.
Right, well, this one is also concerning Abbey Mill, and it's written by Guy Ashton. Sir, Winchester City Council proposes to turn its property, Abbey Mill, into a 180-seat restaurant with a bar and delicatessen, open from 8 a.m. until midnight, 365 days a year. It would be the largest in the city centre. Union Jack's seats 87, the Pitcher and Piano 120, Pizza Express 106, and a number 5 Bridge Street 109, with longer opening hours than any other, and sited in a narrow residential street. It will have 36 staff and around 800 customers daily, coming and going past the 70 or so properties in Colebrook Street from early morning until after midnight. And the delivery and waste disposal trucks, such as a large operation will need, along with kitchens and extractor fans, will generate congestion, noise and pollution all day, every day. The council is ignoring its own very sensible policy, FSF3, where open late at night, and especially if licensed, it is best if restaurants are located where few people live. The Drury Street area has developed as an evening leisure area, and there is also likely to be scope in the Broadway Friars Gate area. Other areas are more strongly residential, and many are of great historic importance. Areas such as this and quiet areas, for example, around the cathedral, are not likely to be suitable for further A3, example, restaurant development, unless its character can be tightly controlled. Small wonder residents of this quiet, historic residential street near the cathedral have concerns. Guy Ashton, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
Trish Spears says that bubbly will taste much better. Sir, wonderful. Winchester's main branch of Sainsbury's will be able to supply the finer things in life to well-heeled residents, according to the Chronicle, May the 30th, specialising in expensive champagnes. Such a relief to buy these locally. May I make a plea that they purchase a basket of everyday food at the same time to help our less well-heeled residents who have to rely on the Basics Bank to feed their families? In the present climate, there is a huge call on the Basics Bank stock, which depends on us, the public, to donate both groceries and clothing to help their very necessary service. Sainsbury's have made it easy by providing a dedicated trolley in-store. Winchester Cathedral and many local churches are also collecting points. Details can be accessed on Google at the Winchester Basics Bank, and I assure you, your champagne will taste all the better for your help. Trish Spears, Kingsgate Road, St Cross.
And this letter is Councillor Corrects Misrepresentation. Sir, I would like to correct a report in the June the 6th issue that stated I had lost my seat on the Cabinet of Hampshire County Council, a misrepresentation which impacted adversely on my reputation. Had your reporter consulted me, she would have learned that I had informed the former HCC leader of my intention to stand down. He later asked me if I would accept the nomination for the vice-chairmanship, and I agreed. At its AGM on May the 7th, the new leader of the Conservative group announced my nomination, and I was unanimously elected Hampshire County Council vice-chairman. This was endorsed at the County Council's annual meeting on May the 23rd. And that is from Councillor Colin Davidovitz, vice-chairman, Hampshire County Council, Kingsway Chandlers Ford. The editor's note says, the article clearly stated that Councillor Davidovitz had been elected vice-chairman.
This letter is from Joan Ferrer, and it's headed, Can, marked, petrol, can't hold petrol. Sir, I visited New Sainsbury's petrol station in Bishop's Waltham to fill up two petrol cans for my lawnmower. As I was doing this, my husband wandered into the kiosk to see what merchandise they sold and was treated to what he at first thought were two phones ringing simultaneously. He asked what was happening and was told it was an alarm indicating someone illegally trying to fill up a petrol can. As we had been using these cans for years, he thought no more about it. An attendant then asked to inspect my cans. I told her they were both in constant use, but she said that while the newish green plastic can was legal, the metal one with Shell Motive Spirit embossed on the side and petrol on the top was not. I was thus not allowed to dispense any petrol. With that, I went to the garage 150 yards away, filled up and got on with the lawn mowing. Joan Ferrer, Ashton, Bishop's Waltham.
Anne Sykes says that shops are at the sharp end of the squeeze. Sir, following articles in the press forecasting how many shops are predicted to close in the next 3 years due to the squeeze on incomes and the general economic malaise, I would like to get the message to the public that local independent shops are really at the sharp end of this squeeze. As a shop owner in Petersfield, established for nearly 10 years, the last 6 months have been increasingly difficult. General footfall has fallen and spending has followed. Being situated on the main car park, it is very easy for me to judge how busy the town is. I have a loyal customer base with whom I keep in touch, but it seems people are coming into town less frequently with less to spend. It may be easier to order with the click of a mouse, but unless you make an effort to come in and use the range of independent shops, one day you will come in and we won't be there any longer. Times are hard and we all understand that. but the need to shop local has never been greater, and support the shops you love. So please, use us or lose us. Anne Sykes, Inside Out, Chapel Street, Petersfield.
And this letter from Rosemary Howland is headed Summer, No Time to Chop Down Trees. Sir, could someone explain when it is illegal to disturb nesting birds by felling trees? Hampshire Wildlife Trust are cutting down vast numbers and also destroying ivy, which is an autumn job. They have already cleared a large number of trees off Winnell Moors, including some grown especially to protect locals from the sight, sound and smell of the A34. These also provided some cover for wildlife and livestock. It is also extraordinary that they can have charge of livestock with apparently no knowledge about their care and feeding. Last winter, they brought in no hay for feed. The 18 ponies on Winnell Moors in a small field with no shelter were helped by locals. But the cattle on a frozen, flooded meadow in St. Cross were not so lucky. There is no excuse for ignorance that results in such effects on animals, with Sparsholt College so near. Perhaps they should be called in for advice. And that was from Rosemary Howland, Park Road, Winchester.
And this one is from Heather Prince, who lives in South Yorkshire. And the letter is headed, Can Anyone Help Heather's Quest? Sir, I am tracing the family history of my granddad, Sidney Victor Broomfield, who lived in Stanmore from the early 1920s to the 60s. He married Ina Mary Haywood about 1911. I hope there is somebody who knew the family or a relative who can help me. Heather Prince, 23, Briarfield Close, Barnsley, South Yorkshire, S75-2DA.
Greenbelt grab is cynical cronyism, says Alan Stone. Sir, I'm writing to you about the impending great Tory land grab of our precious Green Belt. This land is to be made available for house building. It is interesting this is happening now in the light that most Green Belt land is owned by Tories and their voters, and that the Tories are unlikely to get back in after the next general election. The present Tory government is just agreeing to the sale to enrich Tory landowners now while it still can. Not only is this cronyism of the worst kind, it is probably a cynical move which will encourage more Tory donors and show up likely bases for their 2020 general election campaign. The saddest fact is that this land is not necessary for the house building programme required by the government, the high figures for which are being driven by the number of expected immigrants, and will not provide the low-cost housing in towns and cities which is most needed. House builders already have plenty of land banked. Their biggest problem is selling the houses once built, hence the government's taxpayer-backed scheme to help first-time buyers. Greenbelt is prime land and will be used for prime building, but is not replaceable. Land is a finite and precious resource. This issue should not be decided by self-interested politician, but by binding referenda offered to the people to whom the Greenbelt belongs. Alan Stone, Chairman UKIP, Basingstoke, Church Street, Basingstoke.
And this letter is from John Duckworth and is headed Abandonment of Planning Principles. Sir, in your last issue, one of your staff photographers recorded a small part of the latest slice of our nearby countryside to come under the threat of development. May I suggest you prepare a folio to record for posterity that part of Barton Farm which so obviously forms part of Winchester's northern countryside, and yet is destined, due to the avarice of landowners and builders and the blind folly of our governors, local and national, to be part of the city's ever-spreading suburbia. Winchester is far from alone in suffering from the government's abandonment of the principles which inspired the Town and Country Planning Acts, adopted to save the countryside from urban sprawl and ribbon development. And that is from John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop.
Oh. And this letter from Robert Hutchison is headed Decision Offensive and Grotesque. Sir, that county councils can grant themselves permission for schools' developments is part of the unreformed corruption of public life in Britain. Hampshire County Council's failure to plan ahead properly for the growing numbers of primary age children is widely recognised. This is leading to rushed and less than optimal decisions. The institutional dishonesty on display at the Regulatory Committee on June 6th, when councillors unanimously approved the flawed plan to expand Westgate School, shocked many of those present. The National Planning Policy Framework requires developments to give priority to pedestrian and cycle movements, to minimise conflicts between traffic and cyclists or pedestrians, to be sited where the need to travel will be minimised, and encourage solutions that reduce congestion. The Westgate application fails on all four counts. Several objectors put in hours of work to demonstrate that the traffic forecasting was blatantly inadequate. Councillors failed to ask probing questions, swallowing the bland assumptions in the officer's paper and responses. Where was the rigour in weighing up the arguments? Some of those who spoke were cut off in mid-sentence. As the meeting progressed, we entered an Alice in Wonderland world where words came to mean whatever the speaker wanted them to mean. This was a grotesque way of organising public participation. HCC is meant to be an educational authority, but this provided a good case study in how to increase cynicism about local government. All in all, a shameful morning. Whatever one thinks of the outcome, the decision-making process has been offensive and a change in planning law is needed. Robert Hutchison, Winchester City Councillor, Clifton Road, Winchester.
And Edward Budgeon was a boy soldier at the coronation. 60 years ago, I stood outside Westminster Abbey with my friend Ken Brett, boy soldiers of the Boys' Squadron RAC. Age 16 and proudly on parade in SD uniforms and peaked caps set straight down the forehead, we were waiting for the coronation carriage with the newly crowned Queen and Prince Philip waving to the crowds. I thought back on the previous year when I had enlisted in the service of King George VI on February the 4th, 1952. 2 days later, he was dead, and I was a soldier of the Queen for the next 14 years. Ken and I had won our place on the parade after gaining top marks in a tank gunnery competition at our barracks in Bovington, Dorset. As Ken came from London, we stayed with his folks, who kept an eye on us and made sure we were well fed, as we were still under rationing and always hungry. We enjoyed our time at the big event, but all too soon it was back to camp and routine. Edward Budgeon, Martyr Worthy.
And that's the last of our letters for this week. Thank you to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. We asked, with professional boxing returning to Winchester next Saturday for the first time in 30 years, we asked whether boxing should be taught in schools. And it's back to Noel again because he's got the replies.
Yes, first from Sean Palmer, 21, charity worker of Parchment Street, said, yes, definitely. The sports on offer aren't always enough. Boys can be very boisterous. In the US, they wrestle, and the boys can even come out of it with a profession. Fighting is a sport. And Robert Blenkhorn, 23, customer assistant of Stuart Crescent Stanmore, said, when we were back in school, the choice was quite limited. As long as they make it safe, it would be great. I think it's a cool idea. And Jennifer Hayes, 70, of Fair Oak Road, Bishopstoke, said, why not? It does boys good. Boys today often lack a fatherly influence, so perhaps they need something like that. I went to a boarding school, and all the boys did some kind of proper sport. And Tim Adams, 20, shop assistant of Shannon Way, Chandler's Ford, said, I think it's good. As long as they're trained properly and they keep it in the school, then it does not sound like a bad idea to me.
Right, we're going back through the years and the dusty files and the microfiche for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
25 years ago, on June the 10th, 1988, student loan plan causes protest. Placard-waving students met county councillors on Tuesday as they entered the chamber to vote on proposals to restrict tuition fees and introduce student loans. They comprise mainly students from private colleges in Hampshire who are studying dance, drama and stage management or music, theology or complementary medicine. The Education Department's proposals are to introduce a loan scheme whereby students repay their course fees with interest for up to 5 years after they leave college. Such fees range from between £3,000 to £6,000, which means that the students could be landed with their debt long after they become employed. And the second item from 25 years ago is a furious row has erupted between rival airports following the successful introduction of weekly charter flights from Eastleigh to Spain by 160-seat McDonnell Douglas 83 jet aircraft. Eastleigh Airport Director Tony Norman has angrily denied allegations that Southampton Eastleigh Airport is unsuitable for charter operations. The claim was made on Friday evening in a Television South programme by Mr. Chris Hayward, Chairman of Bournemouth Airport.
It's back even further to 50 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right, 50 years ago, June 15th, 1963. Diagnosis of Social Deviance, it headed. In the Winchester address to the British Medical Association on Thursday, Baroness Wooden of Abinger said the medical profession had inherited the mantle of the church in an age in which profound religious conviction is exceptional and intimations of immortality are seldom taken seriously. Lady Wooden reminded her audience that the medical profession today was required to fill three distinct roles in relation to the diagnosis and treatment of social deviance. First, to give evidence as to the mental state of accused persons and the degree in which they were responsible for their actions. Second, whether they might be deemed suitable for medical rather than penal treatment. And third, diagnosis and treatment of types of mental disorder associated with socially unacceptable behaviour.
And it's back to 100 years ago with Noel.
Yes, two items from June the 14th, 1913. And the first one has a big headline, Major Rebellion in Ireland Predicted. The debate on the second reading of the Government of Ireland Bill was resumed by Sir Edward Carson. He said the word betrayal was imprinted on every section of the bill. The duty of the Irish Unionist members was to help to organise their own people, who were rightly preparing to resist, and to ask people in Great Britain to organise for their assistance. Mr. Redmond stated that the Nationalists were prepared to go to practically any length to conciliate any honest apprehension. He told the House to beware how it dashed the hopes of the majority of Irishmen, and said that rebellion by three-fourths of the people would be too horrible a thing to contemplate. And, I don't know if this is related, the second piece, Droxford Guardians and Council, Cost of Lunatics. The clerk read a letter from the clerk to the visiting committee of the Hants County Asylum, informing the board that they had raised the rate of maintenance of patients from 9 shillings and 4 pence to 9 shillings and 11 pence per head per week, to take effect from the 1st of April last. The main causes of the increase were stated to be the advance in the cost of provisions and coal.
Finally, way back to 200 years ago with Jane.
And two items from 200 years ago, June the 14th, 1813. Bonaparte effigy burnt in Alresford. On Monday last at Alresford, the demonstrations of joy which took place in celebration of the blessings of peace were numerous. A very liberal subscription was raised by the inhabitants on the occasion. A sheep was roasted whole in the broad street, and victuals provided in different parts of the town for 500 of the poor, who were bountifully regaled with a good dinner and plenty of strong beer in West Street. The effigy of the fallen tyrant Bonaparte was exhibited and burnt. In the evening, a band of music paraded the streets, and every house displayed a profusion of lights intermingled with branches of laurels, wreaths of flowers, etc. And the second item, the foreign intelligence which has arrived in the course of the last week is of considerable importance. We have to call our readers' attention to the speech of Louis XVIII on the opening of the Senate and Legislative Body, and also the outline of the Constitutional Charter, presented by His Majesty at the same time and unanimously accepted by them. In the north of Europe, everything appears to be approaching a crisis. The Crown Prince of Sweden, with the greater part of his army, is hastening to Norway. Prince Christian has been crowned, and the Norwegians, having received a supply of provisions, it is highly probable that the struggle will be attended with much bloodshed.
And now we're back to the present, and Shirley's got the editorial comment.
Yes, this is headed, County Council Must Grasp the Nettle. Increased traffic has been the major concern of local residents about plans to build a new primary school and expand existing ones in Winchester. The new two-form entry primary at the Westgate will have large catchment area stretching from Abbots Barton to the city centre. Clearly, some parents will drive their children to school. How many is a moot point? The county estimates 23%. Green campaigners suggest twice that. Either way, there'll be many more cars on the road. St. Peter's Catholic Primary School in Oliver's Battery Road North is set to expand. Built in a cul-de-sac, it is already a notorious bottleneck. Plans for Park and Stride should help. St. Peter's parents will be able to park at the planned site, Pitt Manor, and walk their children to school. New parking spaces are to be created in busy Chilbolton Avenue for parents of pupils at Westgate Primary. Even if they don't get nabbed by parents at Western School, which is nearer, it hardly seems a safe dropping-off point. Critics have warned of parents pulling U-turns. The County Council must grasp the nettle and plan more safe parking for parents. Funding for minibuses to cut the number of cars would also help.
And it's on to first person.
Yes, first person this week is by Khalid Aziz, and he says, such a futile and fatuous appointment. James Khan's appointment by Deputy PM Nick Clegg as Social Mobility Czar is as futile and fatuous as the explanations from Khan justifying his serial handing out of jobs to family and friends. The thought that politicians can in some way change society by such idiotic appointments borders on a Canute-like belief that the tide of human nature can in some way be turned by political diktat. Why shouldn't the likes of Khan give a helping hand to those he wishes to? Isn't that what we are all enjoined to do as good parents? Applied more widely, isn't that how the nature of a well-ordered society works? Parents who help their children get on prove the bonds of family are far more strong than any political ideology, unless, of course, you are in Mao Zedong's China or Hitler's Third Reich, where children, always so much more malleable by political indoctrination, unburdened as they are by the doubt of adult experience, were routinely called upon to denounce their parents, even if that meant public excoriation or even a trip before the firing squad. But it is so unfair. Isn't that nice, Mr. Clegg, simply trying to level the playing field between the haves and the have-nots? Sounds good until you consider the consequences of political interference in what should be a matter of parental duty and the enjoyment of personal ownership. Khan, as far as can be known, was deciding what was best for his own business, and in the process was helping out those close to him. Of course, in public life you could argue more strongly for equality of access, but this can lead to the absurd. Having been involved in making public appointments myself, I have seen at first hand how ridiculous such a reasonable-sounding ambition can become when the dead hand of bureaucracy is brought to bear on the process. Observers skilled in fair play, although how they qualified for such a position has never been entirely certain, are mandated and paid handsomely to oversee the appointments process to ensure that we, the often unpaid appointment panel, are being even-handed in the way we carry out our solemn duty. Often they had to write reports about the panel's deliberations, although it was never entirely clear who read these reports. Is society any better off as a result? I doubt it. The issues of social mobility are still with us, and we are told have got worse despite such initiatives. Nick Clegg demonstrates the callowness of a politician steeped in the machinations of bureaucracy to think that appointing a social mobility czar will make a lot of difference. James Khan, flattered no doubt to be courted by a powerful politician, was a chump to accept such an overblown public bauble. Now, after a career of doubtless contribution to society, he's unfrocked as a mendacious, if kindly, hypocrite. Not one disadvantaged person has been helped in the process.
And we're on to items of general news, beginning with one read by Jane.
And this item is Chance Find Places Painter at City Mill. He is considered by many to be the most important British artist of his or any other generation. Now, more than 200 years later, and following a chance discovery by an amateur enthusiast, a painting by the great J.M.W. Turner could be on its way back to Winchester. Winchester City Mill employee Rick Weeks called it a once-in-a-lifetime discovery and said he simply couldn't believe his eyes when he stumbled upon the small watercolour. Mr. Weeks, assistant manager at the National Trust property, said, "I recognised it immediately. I was dumbfounded because I know every image of the mill there is. To see one I did not know was amazing. I thought something's wrong here. This has somehow escaped my knowledge. I was just browsing through the Tate's Turner collection, as I'd heard a lot had been digitalised. To find an old painting of the mill is fantastic, but for it to be by Turner is unbelievable. The people at the Tate have been really helpful, and we have arranged for a high-quality print of the painting to become part of the mill's permanent exhibition for our visitors to enjoy. A spokesman for the gallery, which has the painting stored in its prints and drawings room, where it is viewable by prior arrangement, said they would certainly consider lending the picture to its city of origin, something Winchester City Council's deputy leader says could be a real possibility. Councillor Rob Humby said, "It's something we would love to be able to do. We need to speak to our museum guys first, and it would take some planning, but I will get on to them about this and see if it's possible." Mr. Weeks said, "I've not had a chance to see the original yet, but that's going to happen soon. It would be fantastic if they loaned it to Winchester. We'd love to see it here." The watercolour had been bequeathed to the nation over 150 years ago, but was unknown to the National Trust until now. Dated 1795 and painted in grey and brown wash, the painting forms part of Turner's Isle of Wight sketchbook from his tour of the South Coast when a student at the Royal Academy. It's amazing how the little building has changed, and wonderful to think this world-famous artist stood outside my place of work and sketched it over two centuries ago, Mr. Weeks said. The sketchbook also features a watercolour of the west front of Winchester Cathedral and a sketch of Southampton's Bargate. And this is accompanied not only by a picture of Rick Weeks, who found the study in front of the city mill as it is now, but also a reproduction of Turner's original sketch of a wonderfully dilapidated-looking city mill surrounded by pieces of rubbish and heaps of stone piled up in front of it.
Travel Lodge aims to open 10 new hotels. Travel Lodge is seeking to increase its presence in Hampshire with a further 10 new hotels across the county. It already has 15 hotels in the county, and this investment would create 150 jobs within the region, boosting the local economy annually by £11 million. Travel Lodge is looking for new sites in the Winchester area, as well as Andover, Basingstoke, Christchurch, Fareham, Porchester, Fleet, Lymington, Petersfield, Portsmouth and Waterlooville. Tony O'Brien, Travel Lodge UK Development Director, said, "Hampshire is one of our top performing counties within the UK, with demand growing at a great pace for good quality branded budget hotel rooms from business and leisure travellers. In response to this growing need, we have extended our target list for the region, and we're going to start looking for new sites in 10 locations across Hampshire." Mr. O'Brien added, "These locations stretch from Basingstoke to Portsmouth, encompassing most of the county. We are excited about the growth opportunities in Hampshire and hope to be able to announce more details soon about specific sites." Travel Lodge currently has 15 hotels in Hampshire, employing more than 200 people, including Sutton Scotney on the A34, Eastleigh, Four Marks and Barton Staithley. The 50-room Four Marks Hotel, which was opened in 1987, was refurbished in 2 weeks and cost £250,000. There have long been complaints that Winchester lacks enough budget hotels. Premier Inn got planning permission last year for a 101-room hotel on the corner of Eastern Lane and Winnall Manor Road in Winchester.
A fugitive leads pursuers on a merry dance. With six officers trying to capture their culprit, it had all the hallmarks of a hot pursuit. But this chase surely ranked as one of the more unusual incidents registered in the police log, for the culprit on the run was none other than a black bull calf. The young bull made the great escape from its home in Hokham Mead Nature Reserve off Hiltonbury Road, Chandler's Ford, on Tuesday morning, before leading officers and fire crews on a merry dance through residential streets and gardens. The daring dash for freedom was first spotted by police, who'd been attending a minor rush hour crash in Hook Road at its junction with Hiltonbury Road. Officers did a double take when the baby bull appeared at about 9:15 a.m. before the animal legged it down a footpath. With the animal on the loose, they called Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service for backup, and they deployed their specialist animal rescue team. Along with the police, they began chasing the animal, trying to corner it in various gardens in nearby roads. But each time, the baby bull gave them the slip. A Hampshire police spokesman said people were told to move out of the way because the calf was getting distressed. With no end in sight for the pursuit, more police were drafted in, plus an Eastleigh Borough Council officer and a local farmer. Meanwhile, the bull charged down Ashdown Road, which has a parade of shops and is in the middle of a big housing area. Minutes later, it was tracked down in Maytree Road. In all, the chase lasted 1.5 hours, coming to an end after the wayward beast was cornered in a garden in Lakewood Road. The drama was captured by a TV documentary crew who were following the animal rescue team. With owner Mark Black contacted, the young Dexter calf was led onto a trailer before being taken back to a farm in Fair Oak. Mr. Black said, "It must have jumped a fence. You have to assume it was a dog walker who let their dog off its lead and spooked it. Usually they follow the herd, but it must have become separated, which makes me think it must have been chased off the field. And this is accompanied by two delightful photographs of the bull calf being chased by two policemen, and then another lower picture of the bull calf running desperately away to try and escape.
And this one is headed, King-sized Kappa, just the job for a thirsty mare. They say there are a few things in life that can't be fixed with a good cup of tea. And it seems the Mayor of Winchester agrees. The Mayor, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, and Mayoress Barbara Jeffs, were at Winchester Cathedral's refectory last Tuesday, June the 4th, to throw their weight behind a campaign that will see Wintonians staging their own tea parties for a good cause. Marie Curie nurse Debbie Mullaney and the charity's community fundraising team are encouraging people to support their Blooming Great Tea Party project by holding their own get-togethers in June and July, raising funds for the charity. Wendy Savage, community fundraising manager, said around 100 people turned out for the launch. We're asking everyone in the community to host their own Blooming Great Tea Party for Marie Curie Cancer Care this summer. It's such an easy way to get together with friends or family. The money raised by simply popping the kettle on will help more Marie Curie nurses to provide free care to patients with terminal cancer and other illnesses in their own homes, she said. And it is accompanied by a photograph of everything stopping for tea, in which Canon St John Channel, at the launch of the Blooming Great Tea Party, is pouring from an enormous yellow teapot with "Hold a Blooming Great Tea Party" on it into the Mayor's enormous red and white spotted teacup.
Blind people afraid to travel by bus. Blind people across Hampshire are being cut off from the rest of the world simply because they are afraid to travel on the bus. A survey conducted by Guide Dogs found that 80% of people with sight loss in Hampshire say they are unable to enjoy the freedom that others take for granted because they find travelling by bus so difficult. The survey found that blind and partially sighted people are being cut off from family and friends, missing doctor's appointments, and forced to turn down jobs, with some spending £30 on taxis to avoid taking a bus. It means blind people are put off from visiting friends and family and social occasions like birthday parties. Guide Dogs wants all buses to be fitted with onboard audiovisual technology, which announces bus routes, destinations and next stops, and for further training for bus drivers. Kirsty Necker, who works for Guide Dogs, said, "One guide dog owner boarded a bus believing it to be heading into her hometown, only to find herself stranded in a completely different town she was not familiar with. She needed the support of the public to get home, and it took the best part of a day for her to do so. This left her obviously traumatised and reluctant to use the bus again. All it would have taken was for an announcement on board for her to have realised the mistake, and for the driver to have been aware of the needs of blind and partially sighted passengers and assisted her with her travel, for this type of distressing incident to have been completely avoided." The survey found that being excluded from bus travel has been a clear knock-on effect for the health and employment prospects of people with sight loss across the country. Nationally, more than one in three, 35%, said the prospect of travelling by bus had put them off attending doctors or hospital appointments. 34% had been made late for work, and 14% said it had prevented them from taking a job. Guide Dogs Chief Executive Richard Lehman said, "Buses are a vital way for people with sight loss to get out and about freely and independently, but many feel excluded from bus travel because of a lack of accessible information. At present, there is inconsistency within and between bus companies, which means some routes in some areas are fitted with audiovisual technology, but on many buses, passengers who are visually impaired have no help at all.
This is the Westminster Diary by George Hollingbury, MP for the Meon Valley. This country's housing crisis continues to get worse. Last year in England, around 100,000 houses were built, when more than 200,000 were needed just to keep up with demand. This has been caused by a number of factors, not just an overall increase in the population, but also longer life expectancy and more people living alone. This shortfall adds to house price inflation and leads to increased rents for those who cannot afford to buy. It also means less social housing for those on low incomes, and it's blighting lives and lessening opportunity, as well as harming the economic recovery. There have been plenty of ideas and solutions that have been proposed over the years to tackle the problem, including this government's drive to simplify planning laws to get houses built, but one that addresses the shortage of social housing in particular comes to my mind. Any new development has to provide enough free land to ensure that 40% of any scheme is affordable housing. But due to the financial crisis, less developments are being built, and less social housing is getting built too, because the two go hand in hand. A solution is to treat the 40% affordable component as the public asset it truly is, and build on it regardless of whether the rest of the development is being developed. Housing associations and local authorities could be allowed to bring forward the social elements of sites which have been granted outline planning permission, irrespective of whether the owners develop the wider site. Now, this does sound like a neat plan, but there are, of course, potential complications, such as who builds the infrastructures on the site and where to build the social housing without threatening the economic viability of the wider development. But I don't think these problems are insurmountable, and a scheme such as this would provide a considerable incentive to the developers to get on and build without interference, something that needs to urgently happen. The net result would, hopefully, be a stimulus to the construction sector and acceleration of the provision of social housing. Now, this might all come to nothing, but I think the housing crisis is such a serious issue, radical action must be considered.
And this is headed, Hyacinth brings bouquet to Symphony of Flowers. How do you make one of Hampshire's most beautiful buildings even more attractive? You transform it into a fantastic floral display, and that's what's happened at Winchester Cathedral. The Symphony of Flowers Festival opened yesterday, June the 12th, and is the first such event at the Cathedral for 10 years. Thousands of flowers decorate its interior in assorted displays arranged by creative director Angela Turner and her team, Pip Bensley and Pauline Horan, who have all exhibited at the Chelsea Flower Show. A further touch of class was added at the launch on Tuesday, June the 11th, when actress Patricia Rutledge, aka Hyacinth Bouquet, from Keeping Up Appearances, opened the event. Miss Turner said she was thrilled the event had finally begun after months of hard work. Lots of flower festivals have 2 to 3 years to prepare, but we've had less than one. It's been quite frantic. And now we are here, I'm really excited and so thrilled because everything has gone exactly to plan. It's a magnificent building here, and we really want to do it justice. There was quite a lot of pressure on us because excitement has been building over what we might produce since the last festival here was wonderful. The event is organised by the Cathedral and National Association of Flower Arrangement Societies, and displays have been created by more than 300 volunteers. Jan Malloy, chairman of the Wessex and Jersey area of NAFAS, says, "We were thrilled when we were invited to stage such a massive flower festival. I hope we get a few wows from the public. People will be able to see a variety of designs, and there really is something to suit everyone." Miss Turner added, "Words can't express how much I want to thank everybody for their hard work. They've put their hearts and souls into it." In keeping with the title, every display has a musical theme, while the festival is also raising funds to refurbish the cathedral organ, which dates from the Great Exhibition in 1851. The cathedral flower arranging team has also created a Jane Austen display by her grave to mark the 200th anniversary of publication of Pride and Prejudice. It also features a concert on Saturday, June the 15th at 7 p.m. Symphony of Flowers runs from Wednesday, June the 12th to Sunday, June the 16th between 9 and 5 p.m. with tickets for £10. For more details, call 01962 857 275 or visit winchester-cathedral.org.uk, and there is a photo of Hyacinth Bouquet, Patricia Rutledge, opening the symphony with the very Reverend James Atwell and a wonderful display of white and green flowers behind her.
This one is headed, Playground May Be Replaced by Homes. Winchester residents are concerned over plans that could see children's play areas built next to a busy road. The City Council wants to replace a playground and garages in Westman Road Week with 14 homes. It would then build a new playground to make up for the loss, but three of six locations suggested are in grass in the middle of Fromond Road. Residents raised concerns at a public consultation at Week Community Centre last Thursday, June the 6th. One resident, who asked not to be named, said, "I'd much rather keep the playground. The plans the council suggests involve three areas near a major road, which is a scary thought. We would lose a community facility and gain another that is dangerous. The other suggested areas are in Dean Park, at the Great Field Road roundabout, and in Taplings Road." But Andrew Palmer, head officer for New Homes Delivery, said, "Our first concern is safety, but children use Fromond Road already because it's so well overlooked. We can make it look better and more usable. People vote with their feet, so if they're using it already, there must be a reason." The plans are for a mix of family housing and smaller accommodation to encourage downsizing. The scheme would provide 1 4-bedroom, 6 3-bedroom and 3 2-bedroom houses, along with 2 2-bed flats and 2 1-bed flats. Residents on the housing waiting list praised the plans as a good opportunity. Full-time mum Ellen Brame, 21, of Sussex Street, said, "We are in temporary accommodation at the moment and would like to see a lot more of this kind of housing. It's good to see the council is trying to solve the problem." Mr. Palmer added, "We want to build houses people want to live in and are proud to associate with the council. We aren't specifically targeting homes for the elderly, but wanted to offer housing for people downsizing, because the bedroom tax has thrown up issues for many people." The plans have divided residents, with some eager to see the land used and others against any development. A Facebook page has also been set up to gather opposition to the plans. Ruth Harrison, chairman of Week Tenants and Residents Association, said the current proposals were not suitable. "I agree with putting housing here because the population could explode, but there is too much in too little. It is very, very little in the designs for me to be encouraged to downsize. That's not enough for people with disabilities. The council must appropriate the land before it can make an application. With no delays, building could begin in January.
And the Barton Farm controversy goes on. Councillors have expressed anger at a perceived lack of community facilities after viewing the latest plans for Barton Farm. At a special forum, they saw a presentation on the progress of the proposed development, but made their dissatisfaction clear. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I just think what's proposed is totally inadequate. There's just one central community hall, whereas in Kingsworthy there are at least three hubs, so I'd like to see better provision." Former Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson said, "In Swanmore, for example, we have three or four community halls all actively used. Can you give us some answers that will reassure us? At the moment, your answers do not give me that satisfaction." Leader of the City Council, Councillor Keith Wood, said he understood the concerns, adding, "It would be a pity not to have some influence on community facilities, but I think it's something that has got to be provided at a later stage, and we'll see what exactly can be provided." Around 50 members of the public were at Winchester Guild Hall to receive an update from the developers, Carla, on plans for 2,000 homes on the outskirts of Winchester. There was debate on the numbers of people who would be living at Barton Farm, with Deputy Mayor Eileen Berry estimating that as many as 8,000 could be requiring the community facilities, a figure dismissed by Mike Emmett, Carla Land Director. He said, "It's important not to overestimate the numbers here. The average household in the UK is 2.3. If you do the maths on 2,000 homes, it's not going to be anywhere near 8,000 people." Marcus Adams, of John Thompson and Partners, hired by Carla to create the design code for the site, said they favoured a large central community hub. "My concern is that if you distribute facilities too much, too far away, you may detract from the vitality of the centre." In a statement, Carla said, "The community facilities provided at Barton Farm will be considerable and are in line with the approved plans and the Section 106 agreement. This will include a community centre which will be designed in consultation with the public to provide a facility that meets local needs." Several members of the public addressed the meeting with the rerouting of Andover Road a primary concern. Developers want to close the road off and turn it into an extended foot and cycle path, while diverting motor traffic through the centre of the development. A stopping up order would be required to do this, which some campaigners plan to challenge. But Steve Tilbury, the city's corporate director, said, "The Secretary of State has already considered the proposal for stopping up the road. There is nothing to discuss with Carla about the scheme in that respect, as they have the planning consent already."
And Swanmore gets set for an invasion. A large team of people at St Barnabas Church is gearing up for an influx of visitors to their Swanmore Festival, which takes place in the last week of June. A range of events is on offer throughout the 6 days, starting with a preview of the Flower Festival. This will be opened by Katie Martin of BBC Radio Solent on Tuesday evening, June the 25th, in St Barnabas, followed by a champagne reception. Lovely floral displays will adorn the church, which is pictured, and the audience will be entertained by a choir and jazz band from local schools. Prizes will be awarded to winners of the photo competition, with photos displayed in the Paterson Centre. There will be tours of Hill Place, the mansion featured in the Channel 4's Country House Rescue, on Wednesday, June the 26th. Visitors will be able to enjoy tea in the beautiful garden, see views as far as the Isle of Wight, and listen to the jazz band from Swanmore College. On Thursday, Friday and Saturday, June the 26th to 28th, the church will open all day for people to view the displays, and on Thursday afternoon there will be a flower arranging demonstration. The Reverend Claire Towns, Vicar of Swanmore, said, "I hope all that you see, hear, touch, smell and taste will be a delight to your senses as you explore and marvel upon what's on offer as part of this festival." The finale, on Sunday, June the 30th, will start with a 10 o'clock service in the church, followed after lunch by a fete at Hill Place with music and entertainment by local schools and groups, plus teas on the lawn, games and local craft stalls. Any proceeds will help the church fund projects plan to increase involvement in the community.
Outstanding Royal Hampshire County Council staff, Royal Hampshire County Hospital staff on it. Sorry about that. Winchester Hospital staff were honoured at a glitzy ceremony last week. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust celebrated outstanding nurses, midwives and health professionals at the 8th Annual Director of Nursing Awards on Monday. It marked the achievement of Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital staff. The Chief Medical Officer Award went to Stephen Howard, a clinical nursing assistant on Freshfield Ward at the RHCH. He was described as having a lovely, caring manner and was kind, super, and just the right person to look after older patients in his nomination. Meanwhile, the Winchester Rotary Club Award also went to Freshfield Ward, which was described as being marvellous in every way in its nomination. RHCH physiotherapist Becky Seal won the Allied Health Professional Team Individual Award, while fellow Winchester colleague Pip Nash picked up the Family and Clinical Support Services Award. Deputy Chief Executive and Chief Nurse Donna Green, who hosted the event, said, "Every year I am overwhelmed by the wonderful stories of how our nurses, midwives and therapists have touched the lives of patients and their families. These awards are a great way to say thank you and recognise those who go above and beyond the call of duty every day. I'm so proud of all our staff and would also like to thank the patients and families who took the time to nominate and share their personal experiences with us." The event, held in Hartley Wintney, was attended by the Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Ernie and Barbara Jeffs.
Winchester Railway Station is set to undergo improvements over the next 6 months. Network Rail plans to build a footbridge to connect both platforms and will also install lifts in each one. Building is set to begin in July and will be completed by December. Although works are planned between 7:30 a.m. and 6 p.m, the company said some building would have to take place overnight due to the proximity to the tracks and live electrical equipment. In a letter to local residents, Community Relations Manager Nick Gray said, "We can assure you our contractor is aware of the need to be respectful and considerate of our trackside neighbours and will carry out careful planning of the activities with this in mind. We will do everything we can to minimise the extent of the disruption, but some noise may be experienced. May we take this opportunity to apologise in advance for any disruption and inconvenience caused by our works." It comes as Winchester City Council is looking into a multi-million pound redevelopment of the station approach area to make it more attractive and encourage new business.
And this item is headed Mayor Likes Linda's Design. Part of a Winchester City Centre park is set for a makeover from designers at Sparsholt College. The sensory garden at Abbey Gardens will be revamped with a design by student Linda Stokes. 6 students submitted plans, which were scrutinised with the winning design chosen by the Mayor, Councillor Ernest Jeffs, who said, "This is an excellent example of the Council working with a local college to produce benefits for everyone. The students gain valuable experience of a real-life design work, and Winchester gains an imaginative new scheme. I'm looking forward to seeing the results, which will be right beside my official residence at Abbey House." The Council liked Linda's planting scheme and reorientation to integrate the area with the rest of the park, incorporating some key vistas across the grounds.
This one is headed Police warning after burglaries. Police are warning Winchester residents to keep their homes safe after a spate of recent burglaries. Three houses in Oliver's Battery Road South were hit between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. on Thursday, May 23rd. The offenders left empty-handed from two homes, but stole jewellery from the third. A house in nearby Stanmore Lane was then broken into between 3:35 a.m. and 3:45 a.m. on Saturday, June 1st. The burglars entered via an insecure window and stole an Acer Iconia A500 tablet and a black Samsung phone. Despite the proximity of the properties, a police spokesman said there was no evidence the Stanmore incident was linked to the others. Police would like to talk to anyone who saw a white, new-shape Ford Fiesta carrying two men on the Thursday. Meanwhile, officers are warning residents to keep windows closed when out or at night to avoid security risks. DC Elaine Corkill said, "It is tempting to leave your windows open at night, but it could be an open invitation to a burglar, so make sure you have secured windows and doors before you go to bed." Anyone with information should contact DC Corkill or PC Graham Wren about the Stanmore and Oliver's Battery burglaries on 101, or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. That's 0800 555 111.
The headline is "Mystery as Second Duskart Overturns," and there's a big picture, dramatic picture, of a big Duskart lying on its back. And the caption is, "The overturned Duskart in Walton Chase, the second lorry to have overturned in recent times." The story is, why has this happened again? This is what council chiefs are investigating after one of its Duskarts overturned for the second time. The Biffer vehicle collided with a telegraph pole and flipped onto its roof in Winchester Road, Waltham Chase, at around 11:15 a.m. last Wednesday, and the road remained closed until around 5 p.m. A Winchester City Council spokesman said, "We will work alongside the police and other emergency services to investigate the circumstances." The police spokesman confirmed that three crew members got out of the vehicle themselves and were taken to hospital as a precaution. He added, "There didn't appear to have been any serious injuries. We had to clear the debris from the telegraph pole, and that's the main reason the road was closed for so long." The spokesman added, "No arrests had been made and could not confirm at the time if police would investigate." Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service crews from Bishops Waltham, Wickham and Cosham attended, as did Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, although it was not required. The council spokesman added, "Due to this accident, there were delays with collections in the Swanmore area, where the collection vehicle was working, and in the Waltham Chase area, where the accident occurred."
And this is Chilcombe Church Group Gathering, the annual gathering of a support group for a tiny church near Winchester, will be on Sunday, June the 23rd. The Friends of St Andrew's Church, Chilcombe, are holding an evensong service at 3 p.m. and hope the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, will preach. Afterwards, there will be a gathering in a local garden. Holy Communion is held at the church on the second Sunday of the month at 9:30 a.m. Other events planned this year are a harvest festival on September the 8th and a Christmas Eve service at 11:30 p.m.
Wessex Cancer Trust truly saved my soul, says Sarah. A former client has been appointed manager of Wessex Cancer Trust's new facility in Winchester. Sarah Hawkins has taken up the reins at the St George's Street Centre, officially opened recently by the Trust's Vice President, Sally Taylor. Sarah, was diagnosed with cancer in her left breast in July 2005. As well as the care at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Sarah credits the trust with saving her sanity and her life. I went through some very dark times. I cannot tell you how awful it is to be told that you're going to have a mastectomy, you're going to lose all your hair, and you're going to experience an early menopause, all at the age of 39. You are forced to look your own mortality in the face, and I'm not ashamed to say that I've really hit the wall. Although the treatment was successful, I reached a very low point in my personal life, as it dawned on me that I would never have children, my work suffered, my marriage went into meltdown, and I became seriously depressed. Wessex Cancer Trust really came to my rescue, and I truly believe the volunteers, counsellors and therapists saved my life. I was able to have space and time to think in a way you just can't at a hospital, however good and well-meaning the staff. I could pop in at any time and just talk to a befriender or have a lovely treatment. The wonderful counsellors took me by the hand and walked beside me, helping me find my feet again, showing me hope for the future. I often say the consultants may have saved me physically, but that Wessex Cancer Trust saved my soul. She started to volunteer at the centre and took on the leadership role recently, putting her experience at Hampshire County Council to excellent use. She now heads a team consisting of a professional counsellor, an aromatherapist, a reflexologist, and any number of trained volunteer befrienders. The centre is now open 3 days a week, and there are plans to open for 5, depending on numbers of volunteers and funding.
Party people urged to join the Hat Fair. Talented party people are needed to bring some extra fun to one of the Winchester's biggest festivals. Wintonians will have the chance to show off their talents and wow the crowds at next month's Hat Fair. Three events are currently looking forward to welcoming those who would like to take part in the 39th Hat Fair when it takes over the city centre and cathedral grounds from July the 5th to the 7th. Winchester Schools taking part in a sparkling Mad Hatter's tea party on the Friday, where pupils will parade from Abbey Gardens to the Alice in Wonderland style tea party in Cathedral Close with decorations made by the children. On Saturday, a big dance series of events will take place up at the Law Courts and the Great Hall between midday and 6 p.m, celebrating a wide variety of styles and genres. People of all ages can join in the spirit of Hat Fair by taking part in the 40-minute dance workshops. Any would-be performers will have their chance to shine on Sunday at the People's Stage from noon to 6 p.m. at Oram's Arbour in Winchester's Got Talent show.
And Littleton renews its French connection. A Winchester village welcomed a French delegation last weekend as part of a twinning weekend. Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Ernie and Barbara Jeffs, hosted a party at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall for a group from Laon, which was twinned with Winchester 19 years ago. Around 70 members of the Winchester and Laon Twinning Associations met on Sunday, June the 2nd, to celebrate with a super-sized bottle of Reims champagne. Prior to the party, the group had a trip to Dorset on Saturday, June the 1st, before taking part in a treasure hunt around Winchester on the Sunday afternoon. A spokesman for the Winchester Association said, "We are already looking forward to visiting Laon next May for our 20th anniversary celebrations and would love to take several local clubs, groups or teams with us. The association always welcomes new members and is currently seeking new clubs and groups in and around Winchester who would be interested in making links with their French counterparts. For more details, visit winchestertwinning.org.uk.
Houses hit 3-year high. Hampshire house prices have hit a 3-year high, according to a survey released this week. But only certain areas of Winchester are experiencing the boom, according to a city estate agent. The Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors is reporting prices in the southeast are at the highest levels since November 2009. Sales levels are also up, with a rise in newly agreed sales for the 5th consecutive month, and surveyors predicting more to come. Graham Evans, Managing Director at Penyards Country Properties, said increases depend on location. He said, a property right in the city centre where there is a lack of supply and it's a niche market will buck the trend in a positive way. They are going for £1 million plus where the market is strongest. But in some areas, like out in the estates, where there is an abundance of supply of £200,000 to £250,000 homes, there is little change.
Concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Barbara Chase and Irene Dowding. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks and goodbye to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with the laminated card when you finish listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.